Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I'm your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Every week, we want to have honest conversations about what it means to be in one of the sector's least understood, yet most critical roles. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to remind everyone that my four fundraising frameworks are available to your organization. All you've got to do is go to my website, click on the toolbox, and download this free resource. Inside the toolbox, you'll find four frameworks, 1, 2, 3, 4, that will help your organization ensure that everyone understands how fundraising really works. Not quite so sure what I'm talking about, you will have a framework for distinguishing between fundraising cultures, a planning framework that ensures your fundraising efforts are responsive to the opportunities available to your organization, a campaign planning framework for any major fundraising initiative, and as if that's not enough, how about a KPI scorecard that combines my fascination with the science of expertise with your determination to raise more money? If you'd like to download this free resource, go to my website, lewisfundraising.com/toolbox. Again, that's lewisfundraising.com/toolbox. I'll also put a link in the show notes. Today, my guest is Heather Klein Olson. She is the Vice President for Advancement at the We Raise Foundation in Chicago, a seasoned fundraising professional having worked in development and higher education, social services, arts, and faith-based organizations. Heather holds a CFRE certification and several degrees in communication and business. Hi, Heather. Glad to have you on the show today. Would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Jason. Yes, thank you for having me. I'm Heather Klein Olson. I have been working in development and fundraising for a little over 15 years in all the sectors that you just mentioned. And I am currently at We Raise Foundation overseeing our fundraising and communications, our digital fundraising programs, and happy to be here today.
Yeah. So Heather, I really like what you guys are doing at We Raise. And so before you and I begin our conversation down the path of shared leadership, would you mind just sharing with everyone a little bit about what it is that We Raise does?
Sure. We Raise Foundation is a grant-making organization. We were founded in 1960 after the sale of a sanatorium that was primarily used to treat tuberculosis patients in the early 1900s. And after tuberculosis was eradicated, the hospital was sold and the proceeds founded this foundation. And so we raise money to essentially grant it to organizations and young leaders working at the intersection of poverty, violence, and inequality in the communities across the country. So we are two grant programs or two organizations, one to organizations, our Grants Plus grants, and then we have our Emerging Leader grants to young leaders ages 20 to 35 who are working in Christian organizations around these issues.
Yeah, I remember visiting with you back last, I think that was in the fall, and you have that wall of grantees, and it was very much an inspiring sort of thought to think about what you guys are trying to accomplish. So, Heather,
yes.
Heather, you just recently had an article that has caught my attention, and you and I have talked a little bit about this topic before in some of our previous conversations, this idea of shared leadership. Can you just sort of summarize what it means when we talk about shared leadership, and then let's unpack your article as it certainly applies to philanthropy. But what is your definition of shared leadership?
Shared leadership involves maximizing all the human resources in an organization by empowering individuals and giving them the opportunity to take leadership positions in their areas of expertise, and also for the organization, giving them a greater sense of accountability.
is this quote. You've got this quote at the beginning of the article, this notion of power is essentially shared leadership giving away power. Is that essentially what we're talking about?
It's creating a culture of shared leadership and accountability. It's invoking a sense of trust in your team and the engagement in your team and getting the buy-in from everyone to have them be accountable and work toward the shared goals that the organization has. It's making sure that they have the commitment that the leader does to be successful. And it does mean giving things away to make the leader, to make the young leaders excel more and try harder. I think I've always worked harder when a supervisor or the CEO has said, I'm going to trust you with this. I believe in you to do this. And then I have taken it and worked harder. You know, nobody tries to fail when they are given something to do that somebody says, I believe in you and I trust you to do this well.
So I noticed the other day on LinkedIn that Mike Geiger, president of AFP, had sort of given you some kudos on the article. Why does this matter to philanthropy and fundraising professionals in particular?
I think the CEOs of nonprofit organizations are expected to do so much with such little resources, and it's just, it's impossible. And so they have to give some of that work away to focus on the bigger issues and to focus on continuing to drive the organization in new directions. And so the tactical day-to-day things that they're responsible for doing, they just become too much and they have to give them away. And so the people below them in a hierarchy, they are ready and they want to do those things. And essentially, they just have to be asked and say and be told that they are trusted and that somebody believes in them to do them.
Is there a, before we, I really want to sort of follow the outline in your article, but before we do that, is there has to be an application to your own, to sort of what you're talking about with shared leadership to sort of the, sort of even beyond the payroll. So like the people on the board and the volunteers, even maybe the donors, is there, you have to have some thought about that too. Am I right?
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, the board is responsible for leading the organization. The donors, people who are investing in your mission, are responsible for giving their advice and their guidance and leading the organization. And it's just creating that open sense of that open culture and empowering people to share their ideas and opinions and make them feel wanted and valued and that they do, that they are accountable for making sure that your organization is successful.
So this first idea, this idea of commitment and buy-in at all levels, tell me what we're talking about there.
That is, you know, I thought about how to implement that, and that could be, as corny as it sounds, a contract that the organization, everyone in the organization signs and says, I'm going to commit to being a leader in this organization. And shifting from the hierarchy to the top-down hierarchy to one of shared leadership, of everybody recognizing that they're a leader and they're accountable for the organization's success. If just a few people try to hold on to the traditional model, it can really just sabotage the entire effort because you're essentially placing the accountability and the success of the whole organization on one person, on a CEO or a board of directors. And that creates pressure and tension and turnover and essentially communication problems for everyone.
I tend to think that there, when it comes to fundraising professionals in particular, so we've got a, you know, a lot of people listening to this, and certainly the way you and I both understand sort of the fundraising space, a lot of smaller organizations, development officers that are maybe in many cases is just a sort of a sole individual in a development office. I don't know that they're always sort of inclined to accept that shared leadership. Am I right? So isn't there a degree of vulnerability that you're talking about that has to, it's not just the leader sort of handing leadership down, if you will, but it's also the willingness on our part, on the person in sort of that junior role, whatever it happens to be, sort of their willingness to accept it. Am I right?
For a fundraiser to accept that accountability?
Yeah, or anybody. Yeah, the leader. Yeah, anybody. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't necessarily have to just be in fundraising, but I just know that I think in some of my own consulting work, there's a hesitancy, shared leadership sounds good, but sometimes those of us in the role that shared leadership can be handed to, quite frankly, we don't necessarily want to take it.
Sure, because I think there's a fear, and I think that fear stems from a lack of trust between the development officer and the CEO or their supervisor. The development officer wants to be successful. Everyone wants to be successful. I don't believe anyone ever wants to fail. And so for them to take that accountability really means for their CEO or their supervisor to say, I'm going to give you all the tools that you need to do this successfully. And, you know, I trust you to do it. And if you need help, to come to me and we'll do this together. We're both part of this team. We both, you know, if the development officer has accountability, the person above them has accountability, the CEO has accountability, the board does. So it's really a team effort and everyone's saying, okay, we're going to do whatever it takes to get this job done. But it's really everybody saying, I'm going to pitch in and do whatever it takes. And just giving some trust, making sure that there's that trust between the development officer and their supervisor to say, if you fall or if you think you're going to fail, it's okay. I'm here for you. Everybody fails. You know, we'll do this together.
So if I'm a development officer and I'm listening to this conversation and I'm thinking, okay, I want some of that leadership and I'm going to go ask for it. I want my CEO to share leadership with me. What is that what are you telling, if you're my mentor, Heather, and you're, how am I having that conversation with my boss?
I would be honest and say, I want to grow as a leader. I one day would like to follow in your footsteps, and I would love for you to be part of the team that helps me get there. And in order to do that, I feel like I need these skills that I currently don't have. Can you help me get there?
And are we owning up to those lack of skill? For instance, interwoven into that statement was the idea that we don't have those skills. So is there in the notion of shared leadership, is there an assumption? Is there almost a mentoring component to it? So it sort of assumes that the person sort of taking that leadership role doesn't necessarily have what it is they're being asked to carry out. Does that make sense?
Sure. I think always. I think when you hire a person, you're hiring them because you believe that they can get the job that you hire them to do done.
Yeah.
But obviously they lack some skills to do your job or a job higher than them. So they need to grow in those skills. And I think being a leader is also being a mentor and creating more leaders. So I think there always should be a mentorship component to being a leader, whether you're mentoring your people, the people you manage or others. I think it not only helps them grow, but it helps you grow as you talk about what to do and how to grow. It really just affirms what you know and then helps you grow.
Yeah, I think in the, I've been working with a particular client for quite some time and I've been working with the CEO and we've been trying to, position him very well with a development officer. And so what the project has essentially looked like is him empowering the development officer to self-manage, to become very much accountable for their own metrics and, you know, sort of chart their own course, if you will, within the parameters of what they're supposed to be doing. But it's also been sort of a leading up, you know, she is essentially training him on how to be a really, you know, training him, teaching him how to be a really great boss. So it's almost as if there's sort of a shared leadership dynamic going on there. Because the way that the relationship has been formed from day one has been, A, I'm the CEO and I don't know how to do this. B, you're the development officer and you do. And so you're going to lead in this effort, even as I have to hold you accountable for that. Does that all make sense? So it's kind of like accountability sort of going in both directions. And I think you've got accountability woven into this article. Do you not? Is that right? Yes, you certainly do.
Yeah. I have, yes, trust, engagement, and accountability. Yes. Yeah, it does. It requires everyone on the team to hold one another accountable based on the agreement that they'll both share the leadership. And I think that, you know, I had a boss that once said it's lonely at the top, but it doesn't have to be. It's really the leaders in the hierarchy who, you know, I think are traditional hierarchy who create and instill a top-down, the ones who instill a top-down culture, you know, that make it lonely for themselves. So with this model of you just create a better team with shared leadership, then it's not so lonely at the top. And today, you know, people are their own personal brands, as you know. And if you don't give someone the opportunity to be a leader, they're going to search for those opportunities on their own, and they're likely going to be outside of your organization. So you really lose the opportunity to create somebody who is going to either replace you one day or go on to do bigger and better things and be part of that team that helped that person grow. You know, it's less of a competitive model and more of a team model.
Yeah. And, you know, so a couple of weeks ago, I had several people that were at the AFP conference on the podcast. I was talking to a number of them, and AFP has a women's initiative that's sort of addressing a lot of the women's issues, you know, the Me Too movement and all of the craziness and unfortunate sort of realities of our world. And as I was talking to several women in these conversations, as I'm thinking about this particular conversation, I have to acknowledge that I think women are better at sharing leadership. Would you agree?
Mm.
What do you think?
I'm not sure.
Let me clarify that. Maybe women are better.
Go ahead.
Maybe women are better geared up. Meaning, you know, I mean, a man is designed as a man, a woman's designed as a woman, presumably. So are the skills, here's another way to put it, are the skills that we learn from our mother, right, versus the skills I learned from my father, better preparing me for sharing leadership? How's that sound? Does that make sense?
Yes. I would agree with you only because I think women are better delegators and are better asking for help and are more fearless about asking for help. And that is required with the shared leadership model. I think sometimes men want to hold on to things and do them themselves so that they can elevate and grow in their careers much faster and be seen as somebody who gets the job done.
Yeah.
Where I think women can accomplish more because they know how to delegate and they're not afraid to ask for help.
Yeah. Yeah. And are women more inclined to go out on a limb and take a chance? Because isn't that what the leader who's delegating I don't know. I'm trying to think if my mother or father. I'm sitting here contemplating about my pop, my parents, because I brought up my parents. I'm trying to think of who would have taken the. See, my mother, for example, was probably would have always wanted to take a chance on her son. Right? She always would have, you know, said, "My son can go out there and do that," and so she would have empowered me and encouraged me to do those sorts of things. I think my father, thinking about my father, he might have been the one who was trying to generally try to get me to avoid. Trying to get me to avoid mistakes or, caution and predict everything and those sorts of things. And so I tend to think that I also want, you know, it's certainly large majority of fundraisers out there, large majority of our colleagues in the fundraising space are women. And so it would seem to me that we would actually be a cohort of people out in the workplace that would be particularly good at this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And I think women have been given, and I'm thinking about the difference between, you know, parenting boys and girls.
Right.
I think many, many years ago, we were harder on boys and expected them to always be right and have the right answers. And I think we were a little more flexible with girls. So I think men have wanted to just be right and do a good job and not fail and show that they can do it. And I think women, you know, as girls, they've been more free to fail, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Is there a dark side to shared leadership?
You know, it requires a CEO, if you're going to put trust in somebody, mm-hmm. Somebody that's experienced on your team to do a job, and for some reason they fail, then you as the leader also have to own that failure. And I think that is, that will be hard, and that will really require the team culture to be there. Otherwise it can take the form of blame and shame for the person who failed and the person who assigned the task to step away from it and say, well, I assigned that to you. You failed. That's your fault. I think that's the dark side.
Yeah. So Heather, I think I got the impression that you're just sort of scratching the surface on this topic in this recent article. Is there a follow-up to this?
Mm-hmm. There is. I'm going to write a second article on the tactical implementation of some of the main points of the article.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, yes, I think the tactical implementation at the heart of it is letting your people do more. I think people are hungry for experience, and I do think everybody wants to be a leader. Even if they don't manage people, they still want to be the leader of their area or be the leader of their work. So let them have that experience. They're only going to grow and to, you know, I had a boss that said, you know, your job is to make me look good. And I've carried that. And I think if you give that work away, and most often people are going to want to do a good job and they will do a good job, they're going to make you look better as a leader.
If somebody's been listening to us, we've been chatting for a while and I don't want to lose people's attention, but if somebody's listening to us today, Heather, and they're like, I know how to find Jason, I can reach out to him anytime, but I want to find Heather, how might they do that?
Feel free to message me on LinkedIn at Heather Klein Olson or email me at heather@weraise.org.
Okay.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.